This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's November 6th, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Howdy.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, you can call me right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Starting out with Ron's rant of the week. Okay, big shocker here. It was just announced the Tour of California won't be held in 2020.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like the big pro race that we have here in the United States, and it's just not going to happen. So the only World Tour race in the U.S. has been put on hiatus, they say, for the next season. Very unfortunate. It would be, it's just very, very unfortunate. Tour of California will not be held in 2020. The race organizer has announced AEG, Sports and Live Entertainment Company, that has run the Tour of California for the last 14 years, said the week-long stage race has been put on hiatus for the next season. What the heck does that mean? The organizer did not reveal the exact reason for the decision, but hopes that the race can be relaunched in 2021. Kristen Klein, who is the president of the Tour of California and executive vice president of AEG Sports, said, "While professional cycling globally continues to grow, and we are very proud of the work that we have done to increase the relevance of professional cycling, particularly in the United States, it has become more challenging each year to mount the race. The new reality has forced us to reevaluate our options, and we are actively accessing every aspect of our event to determine if there's a business model that will allow us to succeed, successful relaunch of the race in 2021. Former winners, Bradley Wiggins, you've got three-time in 2015, three-stage Women's Tour of California was also launched quickly, and that became a big deal. There's just, Peter Sagan has been there. I mean, it's just some great names that have come to this, and unfortunately, scrapped for 2020. Very, very unfortunate. So, Sagan, the winner of 7 Tour of California stages, has ridden the event every year since 2010, but is opting to ride the Italian Grand Tour, which is traditionally overlapping with California. So, yep, that's it. That's my rant of the week. We've lost yet another great event here in the U.S. due to, I'm going to call it, I guess, lack of interest for American sports fans. Very unfortunate. We would love to see it come back. I'm hoping that they do come up with something here real soon. Anyway, moving on to the positive side. On the positive side, to go forward, first of all, we had elections yesterday. And this is a local positive side here. We had a huge turnout. I know nationally the turnout was dismal. But that's what I heard this morning. I don't know if I have my figures and facts straight, so I haven't got actual numbers to share with you, but I had heard that it was pretty low. Here in our town, we had a big question on our ballot, so I think that drew a lot of people out. And of course, I was working as a moderator, so I was able to see all these things happening.
I ran to the polls.
You ran to the polls. Yes. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing you do.
I'm running really slow.
Yeah, that's okay. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're moving.
I might as well have walked.
Yeah, but you're moving.
Yes.
So you might as well move. That's
good.
But
I ran to the polls. It's a tradition. It's become a tradition.
Right. Right. So on a positive side, and this actually, I think, actually happened just before the election, but it's somewhat political, so we're gonna talk about it a little bit. And then I'm going to talk about something else political, which was shared by Mike in Eastford. And shout out to Mike in Eastford. But one of the things that I have on the positive side is in New York City, the city council approves a master plan to add protected bike bus lanes. The New York legislators have approved a $1.7 billion plan that will bring hundreds of miles of protected bike and bus lanes to the city streets in the coming years. On Wednesday, this was dated on the November 1st, on Wednesday, the City Council approved a bill that will require the Department of Transportation to issue and implement a transportation master plan, quote unquote, every 5 years, prioritizing safety, the use of mass transit, reducing emissions, and improving access for individuals with disabilities. So the piecemeal way that we plan our streets has made no sense for far too long, and New Yorkers have paid the price every day, stuck on slow buses as pedestrians or cyclists, or as pedestrians or cyclists on dangerous streets. We need faster buses, safer streets, infrastructure for pedestrians and cyclists, and more pedestrian space. So that's a positive side. That's a good thing. New York, yay. Thank you for being proactive and thinking about that. So I'm gonna run this one by you. I don't know if you know who this person is, but her name is Julie Briskman. Do you remember Julie Briskman, Fran? Do you remember this by any chance?
No.
So here's the deal. In 2017, there was a very famous photo of Julie Briskman riding her bicycle down the street and flipping off the Trump motorcade.
Oh, I remember that.
So she was at that time a former marketing executive and local Democratic activist. Unseated, now what she has done is she decided, I'm not going to get mad. She was, by the way, she ended up launching a lawsuit with the company that fired her for doing that for the picture. And she ended up winning that lawsuit, which is very, very interesting. She made national news in October of 2017 when a White House photographer traveling with the president snapped a picture of her riding her bicycle, giving the middle finger to Trump's motorcade as it passed her. The photo went viral immediately, with late night talk show hosts cracking jokes about it and people on social media hailing the unidentified woman as a shero.
Yeah. Shiro is my favorite thing.
So this comes from the HuffPost, and they were the first to identify Briskman, who said in an exclusive interview that her employer at the time, government contractor Akima LLC, fired her over the photo. And she went on to sue Akima LLC. So in the meantime, one of her friends set up a GoFundMe page for Briskman, a single mom of two, and raised a big pile of money, $142,000. So 2 years ago, she was fired for standing up to the backwards agenda of Donald Trump. But now her neighbors in the Algonquian district have backed me up, and they reject the Trump agenda, Briskman told the HuffPost Tuesday night. We worked really hard in this campaign. It was a tough race, and she is now a representative in, let me make sure I got this right.
In Virginia.
Yeah, in the county. So she will now be on the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors. So anyway, I think it's pretty funny. It's a cool thing. Thank you for sharing that, Mike from Eastford. We do appreciate that. It's kind of a funny thing, a little bit of justice for all, kind of a good thing to see. And fun, and definitely really, really fun. So that's more on the positive side, and yet political at the same time. So political is good. Political is not a bad thing. We're going to move on to the maintenance minute, and the maintenance minute, as we get into the end of the season here, and we are looking at our bikes, and we're going, or we're maybe looking at our friends who are all riding bikes or whatever, and we're thinking about getting a new bike.
My bike is shifting weird.
Your bike is shifting weird. Well, I think we should just throw it in the dumpster then. What do you think?
No.
No.
You should fix it.
Right, exactly. Okay, but we can do that. That's what we do. We do maintenance on it. We probably need to, draw some new cables through. I know that I need to pull the, you've got you've got some wheels on your bike that have sealed bearings in them, but the bearings have loosened up to the point where they're jiggly, so I need to take care of those.
Okay.
And that could be part of the shifting problem, too, because we're getting a little bit of play in the rear wheel, and I can't get them tight anymore because they've just worn. So it happens. You ride your bike too much.
I don't ride my bike too much. I ride it just the right amount.
There you go. There you go. I was waiting for the response on that. So anyway, we need to do some maintenance on your bike for sure. But moving on from that, let's say you're new at this and you're looking for a new bike and you're confused. It's easy to get confused. There's a lot of different types of bicycles out there. And I'm going to go through a short explanation here, hopefully, of what those differences might be, and we will we'll discuss that today. and Billy just texted me over, new bike, many exclamation points. So that means he either just got a new bike, because I know he was looking at replacing the one that he was run over with. Not the bike ran him over, but the car ran him over. And he ran over the bike, too. So apparently he's very excited. It looks like he's getting a new bike, which
cool. is a reason to celebrate. It's a reason to have a party.
Well, it is.
Also to go for a bike ride.
It's also a great reason to go out for a bike ride, yeah. So that's kind of cool. But, you know, let's say you're new at this and you're going, gosh, there's so many bikes. I went online, I took a look, and I went down to my local bike shop, and I looked, and oh, my God, there's all these different bikes. What do I do? So we have a little explanation here that does come from Bicycling Magazine, and it says here all of the different types of bicycles. Okay. So a quick look at the type of bikes. So we're going to go down our list here. We're going to go starting with the ones that Fran and I like to ride the most, road bikes, lightweight, efficient bikes with drop handlebars and a narrow tire for recreational riding on pavement. Styles include race and endurance. If you're new, stick with the endurance, not the race. The race is a little, you know, you don't need that. You know, it's going to be uncomfortable. You're not going to be very happy with it.
So is my Focus a racing bike?
I think it is.
The Focus he's
I don't know. I haven't really evaluated your Focus bike because I've never seen it. So
yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I know. You like it.
I do.
Yeah, and racing bikes are really, really fun to ride, but they're not for everyone. And they can have a comfort issue with people, and so then, you know, you go the exact opposite and you look at a mountain bike. Okay, and a mountain bike is a rugged machine with flat handlebars, wide tires. Usually they have big knobs on them for riding on dirt trails, and they could be narrow trails, it could be dirt roads, it could be fields, it could be all sorts of things. Styles include what they call a hardtail, which has no suspension in the rear, full suspension, which has suspension front and rear, and then you can get like crazy mountain bikes that are downhill bikes that have as much suspension as a as a motorcycle. So you can go screaming down huge mountain type downhills and do that sort of thing.
So if I'm just learning how to ride on rugged terrain, which, as you know, I have great skills on rugged terrain.
Right.
What kind of bike would be good for me if I'm just getting started figuring out how to ride on big chunks of things?
Well, you should get a full suspension, heavy duty travel mountain bicycle that you can jump over cars with. No, that would probably not be a good idea. I am silly. I would just get a front suspended bike with a hardtail. I think that'd be fine if you're doing a mountain bike. The rear suspension will give you more control. It'll also be heavier. It'll also be more expensive. So it depends on your budget and what you want to do. And you know, personally, you know my feeling about riding off-road. I mean, I mountain bikes are fun. They're a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Cross bikes.
I'm a cyclocross bike guy. I always have been. If I were going to get a mountain bike now, if I finally decided, you know what, I'm going to have a mountain bike, this is it, I'm going to break down and do it, I'd probably get a fat bike.
Ah.
Because they kind of put a smile on your face when you ride them.
Do you think I should get a mountain bike, or should I just learn to ride my gravel bike better?
I would like to spend some time with you and ride around in the fields down behind our house at Mansfield Hollow and get you to get a little bit more comfortable on just some pretty simple basic stuff. Because you will get better skills on that right now. And you don't need, I mean, And mountain bike's great. Everybody I know rides, you know, that rides aggressively off-road, even those that are riding cross aggressively off-road, they really love their mountain bikes because they say that it teaches them a lot of skills. I think you get a little bit more skill when you've got a tire which is a little bit narrower and a wheel that's a little bit bigger around like you would have on a road bike, but off-road, because you learn how to ride the bike better.
I was talking to a gentleman yesterday who rode the Ashford Adventure ride. He said it was awesome.
Yeah.
The whole thing was awesome.
Yeah.
And he was able to handle every bit of terrain on there. He said there was one spot, I think he took a hill on one of the, like maybe Axe Factory, too aggressively, and he wiped out.
Yeah.
But that's because he took the hill aggressively. But he said he loved the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a fun ride. It really is a fun ride. But there are some points on that ride that, you know, you really need a pretty high-level skill set to be able to handle it, especially if you're riding on a gravel grinder or on a cross bike.
I have terrible skills for that.
Well, you know that can
get skills.
You can improve those, but you can't improve them if you just stare at your bike. You can only improve them if you go out there and actually use it in areas where you need to use skills.
Well, I don't stare at my bike ever. You know that.
I do know that, but you also, when you choose to ride your cross bike or your gravel grinder bike, you choose to find the tamest places to ride it.
Well, I ride the Hampton Hole. That helps.
That's not aggressive. I'm talking about.
You should talk to somebody who never rides or who rides very little how they feel about the Hampton Hole.
I know, but you ride a lot.
Yeah,
and so therefore it has a level of challenge to it. I will give you that, but it's nowhere near where I want to get you to.
Right, but I'm
because
not
where I want to bring you, I want you to get to the Hampton Hole and go, oh, that was nothing. Now I can't believe how much easier that is.
The issue is that I'm not going to go and ride on terrain where I don't have skills alone, and I wind up going for rides on my own a lot, or with people who also don't have the skills. So I'm not gonna be trying that. So you have to like be available and able to ride.
I understand.
And go out and ride with me on that terrain in order for me to practice it.
And I am getting to the point where I am becoming more available as far as my physical condition goes since my little incident.
So we might have a date on Sunday.
We could do that. We could do that. It's gonna be really cold.
And if it's too cold, I'm going to go myself.
I noticed the Friday forecast. It's going to get up to 32 degrees here.
I know, but and Saturday I think I'm moving indoors. But Sunday it is going to get up to the high 40s, and I'm going.
Oh,
out.
I could do that.
Yeah, okay.
I could do that.
You just have to dress for it.
So road bikes, mountain bikes, we covered that. Gravel adventure bikes, drop bar bikes with clearance for multiple tire sizes for a range of riding experiences on or off road. Styles include gravel, bike packing, or cyclocross, which is kind of my neighborhood of bike. I kind of like that bike. I mean, that bike is very versatile. You can use it for a lot of different things, and that's why I'm a big, you know, proponent of it. But utility bikes are designed for utility, such as commuting or running errands, or including, you know, you can get bikes that will, you know, utility bikes that will haul kids or cargo or, you know, all sorts of things.
What were those bikes that Jim and Sylvia were talking about with the big containers on them?
Yeah, they're like utility bikes or touring bicycles also. They can also fall into that touring bicycle list.
But there's like bicycles with like that you could like run a business off. Like you could
That would be a utility-oriented bike.
Okay.
Yeah, utility-oriented bike. And they make them, you know, they're used all over the world. They're just not used here because we are very car-centric here. And we would say, why would you use a bicycle for that when you can just, you know, buy a giant truck? Because most people can't buy giant trucks in other parts of the world. And so they use these utility bicycles, and they will carry like unbelievable amounts of things on them.
If you go to P-Town, you can get a pedicab ride.
You can get a pedicab. And I think you can get one in downtown New Haven, too. And you could probably get one in New York City also.
Oh.
There are pedicab companies all over the place. So that would be a utility bike type of structure that you'd be using. And a lot of the utility bikes, because of the fact that they are handling a lot more weight or carrying, you know, cargo or whatever excessive amounts of product on them. Now, a lot of them are e-assist, so they're electric assist bicycles too. So they give the rider or the driver of said vehicle a little bit more oomph when they need it, which is nice. And that brings me to the next level here, comfort fitness bikes. And we're getting closer to those e-bikes. Okay, so the comfort fitness bike is kind of a cross between the, it's pretty much everything from beach cruisers to flat bar bikes for weekend spins on multi-use trails. And the styles include hybrid, fitness, comfort, and cruiser. So a lot of these would be crossover bicycles, to use a term from the automobile industry, in which case you would, it's kind of a cross between a mountain bicycle and a road bicycle, or more like between a gravel bike and a road bicycle. So it's just, it's got some, they're very popular. They sell really, really well in the bicycle stores. A lot of people like them because they have an upright position, and they also like them because they are, you know, they've got big gushy tires and they're a little more comfortable as far as that goes. And then we go to e-bikes. Electronic bikes can be bikes from almost any of the other categories. So any other category, you can get electronic road bike, you can get electronic mountain bike, hybrid bike, fitness bike, gravel bike. They all can be outfitted with an electronic assist. And they're awesome. I think they're great. They have lightweight electric motors to assist the rider, and it can be a commuter, cargo, mountain, or road bike. And then we move on to fat bikes. And the fat bikes are the ones with the big, fat, 3.8-inch wide or wider tires, so they look like almost a motorcycle-sized tire on the bike. And they ride great in sand and snow and on trails, and you run them at a super low air pressure, and so they just kind of squish out over everything. And they're fun. They're fun. They put a smile on your face. They're kind of fun. So they're kind of neat. And they're almost always styled as a mountain bike. So that's what they look like, mountain and cruiser. Triathlon bikes. Now, triathlon bikes are very specific to the sport itself. They're a road-style bike, and they're built to optimize aerodynamics with a wing-shaped frame, high-level wheel cross-section, so they have a high cross-section and aggressive rider positions. These are not for the faint of heart. These are not something that I would recommend to anybody who's starting to get into cycling, even if they have a fascination towards triathlon because maybe they're a runner or a swimmer and now they want to do triathlon, and one of their friends told them, gave them some lovely bad advice and said, oh, well, if you're going to do that, you better get a tri bike because, you know, you're going to need it. Tri bikes are difficult to ride. They require a lot of practice. They are miserable in the wind, even though they're aerodynamic and very good in the wind in some ways. If you catch any kind of a crosswind, they're not easy to ride. Even professional cyclists who use them in a time trial situation have difficulty riding them. So I'm not a big, big believer in recommending anyone towards a triathlon bike to start with. That is something that is a specialty bike that you get later on when you've acquired some skill. And you can take your road bike and you can put a set of tri bars on it and you can work on your position and your fitness to hold that position and still get almost as good of a speedy ride out of it. So anyway, and then there's tandem bikes, and tandem bikes are the ones that are built for two riders or more than that. You have seen bicycles built for family, and you can get those. So they come in either road, mountain, or cruiser, but road is probably the most common as far as that goes. Again, tandem bicycle is not something, it's not for the beginner. I think that you need to have skills before you can put somebody on the back of your bike and be able to control the bike to the point where you're both safe. So, okay, they have a thing here listed as a park bike, and they're purpose-built machines that are made for various uses, but two commonalities link them. They're used for groomed terrain like bike park trails or skate parks, and they're all great at catching air. They call them park bikes. Okay, that would be that big hit mountain bike, basically. The three main styles are dirt, jump, BMX, and slope style. Once again, requires lots of skill and experience before going down that road, or you will find out what most people find out, or a lot of people find out when they're brand new and begin at this, and they step way over their bounds and go screaming down a mountaintop and on these bikes, and they end up with a broken back or a broken neck, or, you know, they're just, they're dangerous. So don't do that. And then kids' bikes, last one, you know. And that's pretty simple. They can, you can get mini mountain bikes, you can get mini little single speed bikes, you can get little balance bicycles that don't even have pedals on them. If you got a really small child and you want to get them started in it, there's all sorts of stuff out there. So if you're looking for a new bike, now's a good time to be looking. It's a great time to go visit your friendly local bike shop, because they're not as busy as they are in the summertime. They will be able to spend a lot more time with you, maybe answer a lot more of your questions and concerns. And so, you know, this is a great time to be looking for a new bike. It's a great time. So consider it. It's my maintenance minute, which was way more than a minute, but it definitely covers some questions that people might have. So there's a few things here. This I got out of order. So there is a woman out there, and her name is Rachel McKinnon, Dr. Rachel McGammon. And she is a transgender cyclist. And there's a lot of talk about this right now. She is a Canadian philosophy professor, competitive cyclist, and transgender rights activist. She became the first transgender world track champion, cycling champion, by placing first at the UCI Women's Track World Championships for the women's 35 to 44 age bracket. And there's some controversy here about this. And the question is, we don't know what to do with this. But Velo News has a story about this. And it talks about, it has a great article. It's called "The Complicated Case of Transgender Cyclist Dr. Rachel McKinnon." The debate over the cycling's first transgender world champion can't be resolved, but it can be better understood. So it's a great article. I recommend you go to Velo News and read this. I think it will help you understand it a little bit more, and you'll understand some of the complexities to this, because you know, Fran probably has a better handle on this than I do, just because she knows about the actual you know, the changes which happen within a human body when you go transgender. And but there is a question of whether or not she has an advantage, because she was originally not a woman but a man. So it throws, and we've seen this in tennis, and we've seen this in, I'm trying to think of some of the other sports that we've seen this in. Tennis is the one that first comes to mind with me. But this happens, and she's not just winning these races, she is dominating them. So there's a lot of scuttlebutt out there about this. And, you know, if you have a comment on it and you want to talk about it at all, this is one where I will point you towards the Facebook page, Bicycle Talk, and please drop a comment there and tell me what you think about it. But, you know, after she won in, let's see, the world title, oh, God, I can't think of what the date is here, but of course, it was the news of her victory was picked up by the infamous Breitbart.com with an opening sentence: "A biological male claiming to be a transgender woman won the."
Yeah, that first phrase, "biological male," is transphobic.
Right, exactly, and that's coming from Breitbart, which is definitely
a phobic
and opinionated site. So therefore, you're going to see that. What happened next? The Twitter feed became a fire hose of offensive comments aimed at Dr. McKinnon from the dark and toxic dregs of the internet. Well, the internet can do that.
I've seen some horrible, horrible tweets and comments thrown at Rachel McKinnon. They're just stuff that I don't even want to think about or read. It's just terrible things people said.
Yeah. So it's just an interesting thing, and I just want to, you know, throw it out there and see what people think. I'm just curious as to what people might think about that. You know, the current rules and the research, we'll get the basics out of the way. Transgender people exist in society, right? They always have, and they'll always will be. Within our society, people of all races, genders, and religions have the right to participate. The International Olympic Committee, the IOC, follows this philosophy too, and it's stated in their fundamental principles of Olympism, an ode to inclusivity. The practice of sport is a human right. Each individual must have the possibility of practicing a sport without discrimination of any kind, and in the Olympic spirit, which requires mutual understanding with the spirit of friendship, solidarity, and fair play. So that's directly from the IOC, which is kind of interesting. So how does international sport and its spirit of inclusivity create rules that govern a society that's inherently unfair and unequal? There's no universal rule book. You know, it's a subject that we could probably talk about forever. But medically or from a medical aspect and looking at it, there is no testosterone level standard across all sports. And there are some women that are born with more testosterone than there are men.
That's
right. Am I right?
Yes, that's true.
This is why I keep a doctor in the house, so I can get these questions answered.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to measure a woman's testosterone?
Yes.
And tell her that she's
that's what
not,
they're doing.
And that she's not going to be able to participate in a sport, because there are plenty of women that are not transgender who have high testosterone
they
levels
have,
who are also,
yeah,
you know, talented because of
right,
that, of course. But
right. Well, you don't measure.
Where do you draw the line?
Well, you don't. If a woman is not a trans woman, and that she was born, you know, genotypically female, they don't measure testosterone. Well, I don't know. Do they measure? They might measure testosterone, because don't they measure measure you for doping, because you might get accused
right,
of doping.
Right.
So they may be measuring testosterone anyway.
So
it depends on
be.
Whether the IOC measures testosterone. But there is a rule for trans women. The IOC, it says here that they that you can compete in the male trans men can compete in the male category without restrictions, because
mm-hmm,
they're not seen as having an advantage.
Right.
Trans women have more restrictions. They have to show that their testosterone is below 10 nanomoles per liter of blood for 12 months prior to their first competition. That's how they do it. So that would be the way to do it. Have a parameter that's a hard parameter, that's a that's a biometrically measurable parameter, and keep it there. And then everything, because once you have that, if this person meets the criteria, if you have criteria for the person, and the criteria are a rule and it's a number, you meet the criteria, you get to compete. You don't meet the number, you don't get to compete. Everything else becomes transphobia. Everything else becomes, you know, what do you think about? Because if they're scientific, first of all, it depends whether you accept that trans is acceptable. And, you know, people on the far right don't necessarily accept that being trans is acceptable. And that's why Breitbart came out with its slur of saying a biological male.
Oh, I know.
You know, that's
well, look at the source.
Right. So that's so you've got it's fraught, because transphobia exists, unfortunately. But if you accept that there are trans people, and that you want trans people to experience themselves in their in the gender where they see themselves, then you have to be supportive. And that means that they get to compete. So if you're a trans woman, you get to compete with women. And if you're a trans man, you get to compete with men. Trans men, it's not seen as advantage when you're a trans man, because you're transitioning from female to male.
Right.
So they can compete in men's sports without restriction. But trans women, the concern is that, well, you spent some part of your life with your muscle development, your bone development, under the influence of all that testosterone. But the way they try to make it fair is by controlling the level of, you have to prove your level of testosterone over the course of a year.
Right.
And then Dr. McKinnon herself went on to cite a study that shows that there isn't a relationship between your testosterone level and your performance.
Yep.
So if that's true, then everybody should calm down.
Right.
Let her compete. If she has to make a certain cutoff for testosterone, let her do that. And then everybody else, work on your transphobia. Work on your – people are trying to express themselves as trans and non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to really look inside yourself and say, who does this hurt? People expressing a gender. Why? How does that hurt? There are no guns involved. There's no beating up involved. There's no climate change involved. Nobody is suffering. If you are suffering because another person is expressing themselves the way that they want to express themselves, number one, if you're making it harder for them to express themselves, you're affecting their happiness. Number two, I submit that you're affecting your own happiness. And number three, it's none of your business.
Right.
You know, that's your problem. It's not theirs.
So,
if you have issues with trans people, but more and more trans people are, you know, being recognized and having
sure.
rights protected.
Sure.
They're human beings with rights who are trying to express themselves the way that they perceive themselves to be. And if you're chasing after them, you're wasting your time.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like that thing about if you're killing somebody in the name of God, you're missing the message. That great thing that Ken Ferguson used to play.
If
you're mad at somebody for something they're doing in terms of their own happiness, they're not the one with the problem. You are.
Right. So, the NCAA in 2015, there was a Dr. Eric Villain. Professor of human genetics at UCLA, and he helped write the NCAA's rule for transgender participation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Under those rules, transgender women must undergo 1 year of testosterone suppression therapy before being allowed to compete. Villain referenced studies that showed that a year of testosterone suppression significantly dropped the muscle mass in adult males.
There you go.
Okay, so... he also said the NCAA's rules were also aimed at inclusivity and that the governing body aims to give everyone the chance to compete. Creating rules around transgender participation, he admitted, was extremely challenging. He said the entire concept of anatomical equality for transgender athletes was simply not feasible, and thus it was not a stated goal of the NCAA rules. So it's about making everybody biologically equal, and this person thinks that it's a common misconception when we start talking about transgender athletes. People want transgender females to be physiologically identical to born females. If they're not, it's unfair. That's just not possible.
Right. It's not.
It's not. So can you turn a man's body into a woman's body? The short answer is no.
No.
And so you're going to – but the big issue is we're starting to get – and this is why I'm bringing it up, because I'm reading about this and a fact that, you know, Dr. McKinnon is smoking everybody on the track big time. We're getting a lot more pushback from female racers. And, you know, they're having a hard time dealing with this, because this is like – it's taking away a little bit of their glory, or is it? Or if someone has actually been through all of this and has gone through the changes that are necessary and the time period that's necessary to get the body to change over, is it any different than someone new who comes into the scene who is... What do you call it when the woman has more testosterone? You call it a certain type, right?
You mean a woman who's born biologically female and has high testosterone?
But I thought you said that there are some. Yeah, maybe there are some.
Well, you have
like
a few. You have different situations. You can have a woman who has polycystic ovarian syndrome, and she might have elevated testosterone. And
mm-hmm.
you can also have. You can have a woman who presents as phenotypically female, And her sex chromosomes are XXY.
Right, that's what she called it.
So you can have that. Right. So they have a Y chromosome, which means they're going to, if you have that Y chromosome is going to turn on autosomes and they might make more testosterone.
And they might perform better because of that. So what's the difference between that and having somebody who's transgender, who's been through a year's worth of the therapy and therefore, you know, should be fine?
Well, one of the problems.
So it's a tough story.
One of the problems that we have is we have a world that is not compassionate. We have a world, and the other thing is, this is bike racing, and people are competing against each other. So because they're competing, if they think someone has an unfair advantage, then they're going to be upset about that.
But it's not just bike racing. It's track and field. It's, you know, there's other
all kinds of
there
stuff,
are other
sure.
sports. There's soccer. There's a lot of other sports that are involved in this. So
here they in the article, they have what's her name? Sarah Fader, who was mm-hmm. Sarah Caravella. And she was annoyed that she had to practice. She had to compete against Dr. McKinnon. And Dr. McKinnon is a big woman.
Yeah, it's 6 feet tall and 200 pounds, and Fader's 5'5 and weighs 135 pounds.
So if you're
pounds.
A sprinter, you're going to be... But the thing is, you could have a woman who's
you
has those dimensions, too.
And, you know, I've seen men sprinters that are really tiny people, and boy, can they sprint.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
They have a strength-to-weight thing going on.
It's a strength-to-weight thing, and it's a you know, a power output. They've got an ability to generate more power. They got more fast twitch. So therefore they can sprint better. There's a lot of factors that are involved, and if you start stepping on this, let's call it in all these directions. So where else do you step?
So Sarah Fader pulled out of the competition when
she did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
She's been the strongest voice against it. She's been really, really strong about it. So it's an interesting, I just thought it was an interesting thing to bring up, and I'd love to hear people's opinions on it. And you can address it on the Facebook page, Bicycle Talk.
She made a good point. She said that people are calling Rachel McKinnon a cheater. And she's not a cheater because the rules allow her to compete. She complies with the rules, so she's not cheating.
She is not.
It's just a question of whether it's fair because of her stature. But I submit that you can have a 6'2", 200-pound woman. That's within the realm of possibility.
Right.
You know. So the thing is, you can have tiny little women who can really move a bike, and you can have huge women. What was that woman, Beryl?
Oh, Beryl Burton.
Yeah. How big was she?
She was big.
Yeah.
She was a big girl.
She held
the world's time trial record for like ever.
Right. And she was big.
And she was big. And there were a lot of men that couldn't run what she was running. She was impressive.
She used
to turn a gear that was like stupid.
I think
big.
If that in a world where we're going to accept that there are trans people, that there are people expressing themselves in all sorts of ways in terms of their gender, they're expressing themselves as trans, they're expressing themselves as non-binary, that if there are concerns about the fairness because somebody may be perceived to have an advantage, that you just have to set parameters. That's what you have. That's the way to do it. You set parameters, and then you allow them to compete. And so if it's a trans woman or a non-binary person who wants to compete as a woman, then you set parameters, and then you work on your kindness. We need the world to be a kinder, gentler place. And if we come from this, if we come to this with a spirit of kindness and compassion, and that there's a place for everybody in this world, you wouldn't have these angry tweets and Twitter storms and all this nastiness leveled against people who are expressing themselves in numerous genders.
I know. And there's the part of this article here, too. It says, Dr. McKinnon points to other results in track competitions that put her physical ability into a wider context. She raced in the International Elite Field in Trexler Town, Pennsylvania, earlier this summer. In the spring qualifier, Dr. McKinnon finished sixth place, nearly half a second behind the winner, who was Caitlin Ward, the runner-up at Australia's Elite Sprint National Championships. In September, she competed in Canada's Elite National Championships, where she finished in 11th place in the 500-meter time sprint.
So guess what? Sometimes she doesn't win.
In Dr. McKinnon's eyes, she is a great track racer, but nowhere near the best. And here's her quote. People seem to think that there's no issue of unfair advantage when I lose, but it only seems to be an issue when I win.
Right. Exactly.
There you go. And she says, I don't think this, quote unquote, she says, I don't think this is that's fair or reasonable. And so, you know, there it is. I mean, she can lose. It's not like she's winning everything.
Right.
She did smoke out the world championships pretty good. I mean, she definitely did. But the point is,
did she win all the events or did she win just one?
I think it was a short sprint. I don't have that in front of me.
Yep.
But her best peak power output was 1,741 watts.
Wow.
Yeah. Which she held for 1 second during training. Normally, her peak power wattage is, peak range is 1,550 watts by contrast.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you imagine putting out that kind of wattage? Well,
no.
I know people that can, but I'm certainly not one of them. I can't
even
come close.
I don't have that body. There's no chance.
And I don't either. And I think that when I was put on a test, and I think I put out a little over 500 watts for, you know, about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And then that was it. I was done. But I will never put out that kind of wattage. And my you know, the best wattage back when I was tested at that time, my wattage when I finally got to the point where I was generating, you know, hit my lactose range, my lactic acid range.
Your lactic threshold.
Yeah, threshold mm-hmm. was at about 210 or 215 watts.
Mm.
And once I get to there, I'm just generating lactic acid. And it's just, it's a bad place to go because I'm eventually going to either have to expel that from my body or I'm going to crash and burn.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, we're all different. But I'm also a little person. I'm not a very big person, so therefore. But and then I'll ride next to, like, my friend Dave Geiser, and I can only imagine how much wattage that guy puts out. He explodes in the sprints. The other guy who's small but puts out great wattage is Pat Bowe, our friend Pat Bowe.
Oh.
He has a killer – he's got the fast twitch thing going on. He's got an amazing sprint. And even at – he's getting close to 70 now.
Some people
and he can
have,
still fly.
Some people have very efficient mitochondria. I don't know what it is that makes people different. I mean, and I wish – maybe this has been studied, but I'm guessing that some people have more efficient mitochondria. They have more mitochondria or within their mitochondria, they have more receptors or they have more – you know, you have electron transport chains inside your mitochondria. Maybe they have more of them going on. I don't know. Or their ability to process B vitamins is higher than others. There's so many mechanisms why that might be. And so that's why you're going to see some little people be good sprinters. It has to do with their it has to do with what's going on inside the mitochondria and inside their energy systems. They won't necessarily have bigger muscles, but they'll inside their each muscle cell, there's some really efficient stuff going on. And Amanda Lawrence is one of those
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got some other things here that I want to explore, but, you know, we're going to run out of time if we get deep into this one. It's all about diabetes and cycling, and
oh,
I would love to bring
John Kramer's
on.
John
Kramer on this one.
Kramer's. Yes.
We need to bring John Kramer's on about this, but
yeah.
there was a really cool article in, I think it was Bicycling Magazine, I'm pretty sure, and it was, yeah, this, so the cyclist is by the name of Zach Hawthorne, and he uses a fitness tracker to help manage his type 1 diabetes, which is wicked cool because he's been able to control it, and he's had type 1 diabetes for about 15 years, and he's 28 years old, and it never stopped him from doing anything except living off the grid because that's where he uses fitness trackers along with diet and exercise to help control his blood sugar levels. So there's I think we need to reserve this for a little bit more time because I think we could have a lot of fun with this whole article and with some of the other research that I pulled on this because it looks interesting to me. The fact that, you know, I had a friend years ago who was a roommate of mine who was, as an adult, was diagnosed with, I believe, type 1 diabetes. And, you know, he's fought with it his whole life, but he... I got him into cycling at the time. He was a roommate of mine. I got him into cycling, and he got into bike racing and ended up doing that. And it was a struggle. You know, he had to learn how to – there's a lot of things you have to learn how to compensate with. He used to carry little candies in his back pocket just in case because, you know, he'd crash out, and then he'd need something to get himself home. But those are the things I can remember at that time. But there's, you know, that's something we definitely would, I'd love to explore that in the future. And if you are listening to this show and you want to contribute to that and you want to talk with us about it a little bit more, maybe even come on the show as a guest, we'd love to have you. And you can post onto the Facebook page, Bicycle Talk, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you know a cyclist or an athlete that is working within the parameters of what they can for this disease, I'd love to hear from you because I think it would be really interesting to hear. So there's, you know, a lot of articles online about how to manage diabetes while cycling. There's just a ton of really cool thing, cool pieces of information there, including articles from a site called practicaldiabetes.com, and they talk about cycling for people with type 1 diabetes, practical diabetes. Kind of cool. So anyway, if you have that, I'd love to hear about it, because any way that you can help fighting a particular disease or you know, an obstacle that's in front of you, it's kind of a neat thing, and I'd like to know more. So here's a question for you, Fran. All right. Cyclist or biker? What are you, a cyclist?
I'm a cyclist.
Okay.
Bikers
because
ride motorcycles.
How many times have we been called bikers?
Yeah. Those are motorcyclists. Yeah.
So this states that it's hard to sum up the entirety of bicycle culture and the people that comprise it with just one word. Language is often nuanced, and the meaning of a word can go wildly by person. So we wanted to know, what's the difference between a cyclist and a biker? So this is from Bicycling Magazine. They took it to social media and they asked the readers the important question, hoping to solve it once and for all. And then the first comment was, bikers ride motorcycles, cyclists ride road bicycles and mountain bicycles bikers ride motorcycles, cyclists ride road bicycles, and mountain bikers ride mountain bikes. That was from an Instagram post.
Right.
So what we're discussing here is the connotation of the word, the implication of it, and the images that come to mind, and even the feelings it evokes. That's a lot harder to pin down. Bikers are more rad. Cyclists are more fast, replied an Instagram user. I can see that. That's coming up from an urban angle right there. The term also can vary depending on who's describing it. Cyclist is anyone who rides a bike, calls themselves someone else. A biker is what anyone who doesn't ride bikes calls someone who does bike, says pro cyclist Ellen Noble, who goes by the handle Ellen Likes Bikes.
Yeah.
At Ellen Likes Bikes. At the end of the day, the best way to look at it is a cyclist logs many miles, mostly on the pavement. A biker flies up and down the mountains in the dirt. Either way you look at it, you're awesome for doing it. So anyway, cyclist or biker, if you want to comment on that, you can do that on the Facebook page. That's fine. We'd love to hear from you. We always love to hear from you. I get lots of fun emails and comments from my listeners, which is fun. We are coming up to the, we're on the events page. Here we go. We're going to events. Cyclocross is still alive and kicking here in New England. I know I talk about it a lot, but we are the hotbed for cross. This is where it's all about. This weekend coming up, November 9th through the 10th, the 29th annual Verge Northampton International Cyclocross. If you're competing in it, good luck. It's a tough race. It's going to bring in a pretty good crowd. If you're not competing in it, you want to see what this is all about. It's a UCI race. It's a big deal. Adam's been putting this thing on for years, and it's definitely a really, really big deal. You should go check it out. November 9th and 10th in Northampton, Massachusetts. There are a few small races. There's a small race that's next to that. They're going to get squashed by that, and it's out in Falmouth, but it may be so far away that it may not get squashed. Here's a fun one. The 29th annual West Hill Shop Cyclocross Race in Putney, Vermont. The West Hill Shop Cyclocross Race was one of the original races back when Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross was established, and also Carver Cross, which was out at Carver High School in Massachusetts, when that was Bill and Neil and myself were all putting on races back then. And Tommy Stevens, of course, was working with Bill on that. So those were some of the old names in the business. But the West Hill Shop Cyclocross Race is still there. My question is the long downhill dropping down into that squishy cornfield if it rained still there? That'd be nice to know. You can, send me an email. I'd love to hear more about it. The KMC Crossfest in Thompson, Connecticut, part of the Connecticut Series. That is coming up. That will be the next to last race in the Connecticut Series, and that is on November 23rd. Once again, it's a two-day event. It's just listed here actually as November 23rd only, so maybe it's just a one-day event this year. I'm not sure on that. If Richard is listening, reach out to me. Let me know what's going on, or I'll go online and I'll check it out. And then the last race of the Connecticut Series, which is the Bishop's Orchards Cyclocross Race, the Connecticut Series of Cross Finals, and the Connecticut State Cyclocross Championship in Guilford, Connecticut. And we've got more. The Ice Weasels cometh in December 14th in Medfield, Mass. There's national championships coming up. But anyway, that's the whole cross scene. And then, of course, there are some recreational events coming up, too. November 16th, we have the Maine Sport Outfitters Turkey Ride in Rockport, Maine. On November 23rd, we have Hartford Cranksgiving, which is kind of fun. So there will be that ride. And these are recreational rides. And then there are plenty of others there, too. If you take a look and you will see CCNS Winter Ride Rising Challenge in Middletown, Connecticut, December 29th through January 24th. So there's lots of stuff still there. If you go to Bike Reg, you'll see there's still listings of things that are going on, both recreational and race-oriented and cyclocross-oriented right here in New England. Be sure to visit Bike Reg at bikereg.com, my favorite place to go. And they're also, if you're putting an event on, they're a wonderful place to promote your event. So anyway, my name is Peddlin' Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can always send us an email. And you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, or better yet, be on the show as a guest, please send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.